Welcome to Reconceive, a Beyond Studio podcast, where two mental health therapists and a fitness coach explore the interweaving connections of mind, body, and spirit. Every episode covers an area of this connection and how we can reimagine ourselves and our world when we see these connections more clearly.
Hello, and welcome back to Reconceive. Today we're here with just the three of us, Deborah, Shauna, and Melissa, because we are starting a new series that we are all really, really excited about, and I'm hoping that you guys will be too. We are starting a series on spirituality, and this is going to be a combination of interviews and also the three of us covering other topics. But for today, what we want to do is just kind of open up what we're going to focus on through the series, and also just give you a little bit of background for us personally so you know the paradigm that we're talking from individually. So, can you guys kind of start with that? Just give some insight into where do you come from when it comes to all things spiritual?
You know, we were just talking about how vast this subject is, and I feel a little overwhelmed by it. This is Deborah, by the way. And yet I'm so excited about spirituality. I'm so excited to talk about it with all of you, and to try to wrap my hands around it in a funny way. But I guess the older I get, the more I think that everything is spiritual, and that everything that seems tangible is more spiritual than tangible. Than that what is really real is the spiritual side of us. But that's not the background I come from. I come from a really very structured, fundamentalist Christian background. So I've been in the process of escaping it for a lot of years. Mm-hmm. And now my thinking is wide open about all this. And I'm a little scared too. So there you go.
This is Shauna here, and I'm the one at the table that comes with the least structured religious spiritual background. So my parents grew up, especially my mother, extremely Catholic, and both were divorced and, of course, excommunicated from the church, and then remarried each other later on. And religion was something that was there. We kind of went to church. My mother had a bad taste in her mouth. From the excommunication, of course, she could be recommunicated if she paid a large fee and went to counseling with a priest, which, of course, a man who's never been married before, and then declared that the marriage had never happened. So she eventually slowly became farther and farther removed from the church. And it was something that when I was even at a young age, admired the practices and the tradition and the music and the arts. And I'm actually an art history art major, so a deep appreciation for what the churches have done in those artistic areas. But it never really appealed to me, nor did I understand this concept of God and the Bible, and women couldn't serve in the Catholic Church. That's what got me even as a little girl. And yet I had this very torn mother who was really into women's lib, but yet wasn't allowed in her younger years to express that with the Catholic Church. So for me, I feel like religion, we'll address the spirituality. Yeah, this is a big, scary topic. I'll have a lot to say later on. What I see spirituality is, I think I agree with you, Deborah, and it's energy for me.
Energy.
I experience spirituality when I'm outside in nature, running or on my paddleboard, on water. And the older I get, I agree there's less that I can explain. And the scientific part of me wants everything to be explainable and have a reason. And then the older part of me, as I grow, says that not everything can be explained. And sometimes there's something higher than this, whatever we want to call it. And we just have to keep learning and letting those experiences happen to us as we get older. And we'll figure it out as we go.
So clearly this is not going to be a series where we answer all the questions. I think that we will pose a lot and have very, very few answers, and that is okay. Mm-hmm. So I also had a very specific spiritual upbringing. I was raised as a missionary kid overseas as a Assemblies of God missionary family, and we were over there until I was 16. So God was very associated with everything. It was associated with work, with why we did everything that we did. It was intertwined with pretty much all activity. And since then, I, you know, went to Christian schools, went to grad school at a seminary, kind of did all of the expected things as far as staying within the religious family for a pretty long time. And at this point, I have kind of just let all of that go. Not ever in a rebellious way, not in a I'm done with it way, but just in a release of I really don't know. There's so much more that I feel unsure about than I feel sure about. And I have declared this year the year of saying yes to things that I would have always set aside as I can't even investigate that because I'm a Christian and that's not what we do. So I'm just in a phase of investigating all kinds of things. And I also agree. It's at moments pretty scary. And my only guiding principle that I'm using while I do all that exploration is to make sure that it resonates with something good and beneficial. And if it meets that, I'm just going to say yes to it for a while and kind of see what happens as all of that shakes out and see what sticks and what doesn't stick. And so I'm kind of interested to see where that takes me because it is not where I've been previously.
And you know, I said I was scared, but I'm not really scared. It's just that this is so big and I think, so I'm in a place in my life right now where all of the relationships that I have ever had are changing and transforming into something else. And so I guess it feels risky right now mm-hmm. to sort of veer too far away from things. And I'll also say, I noticed that in myself, there's an arc to this religious spiritual story. So I was raised Church of Christ, and some of you may know that's very, 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 very conservative. Very, 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 very like the most right-wing conservative kind of group you can find. And then, so everything was about God. Everything was about God and Jesus, and everything was about church. Everything. I even went to a religious school starting in the third grade. But then, so my story arcs when I get to be in my mid-20s and I leave for graduate school, and then suddenly nothing is spiritual. And I go, it's all science. Everything is science. We don't need anything but science. I only want the facts. I only want the scientific method. What I can observe empirically is the only thing I want to know. And so then my story arcs again, and now I'm 52, and my child is about to be a senior in high school, and I feel very ungrounded. But and so that's why I'm saying I'm back at this place of, well, everything is spiritual, and I want to explore these other, these new and alternative things we've been talking mm-hmm. about. But I also feel very frightened of the unknown.
Like a good, exciting, scary.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be good things that come out of this.
Exactly.
It's not a fright. It's not a frightening scary. I don't see you as frightened. I see you as.
Right. You're right.
What's going to happen? Maybe it's a. Mm-hmm. It's expectations.
You can't anticipation.
Yeah, anticipation.
Yes, butterflies in the stomach. Mm-hmm. But it is not like mm-hmm. you're right. It's not like a race to chain the door closed. Right. It's not like that.
Right.
I'm kind of scared.
Not a panic.
Right.
So I think that's probably a good thing for us to address and start with is why we feel like we're taking such a huge risk. because I know that as people listen to us talk, they're going to feel that too if they are from any kind of traditional background. And it is true that we're going to be coming at this from a mostly religion equals Christian versions of religion, and that is because we are in very, very Midwest America. And that is mostly what's here. However, I grew up in non-Midwest America, and so I'm familiar with a lot of different versions of religion and spirituality and things like that. But because of where we are, I think a lot of our examples are going to be the more Christian tradition examples. And that's okay. And so if people are also coming from that background, I think they're really going to resonate with this feeling of, I might be doing something bad just by listening to people talk about non-Christian things or alternative things. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, which was in the 80s, it was New Age, right? Like New Age was this huge threat to Christianity. We don't use the word New Age anymore. I don't know what words we use, but it's kind of that same feeling of if it is other, it must be bad.
Yeah.
And I think that this series is kind of a commitment to exploring the other. Even if it feels bad and risky, we're still going to do it and just see what happens. And so if people are listening and start to feel a little nervous with us, that's okay.
We're all in together. That's okay. Yeah. I might be nervous too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And uncertain about where the answers end up. And another commitment that I think we have is that none of this will be prescriptive, as in we think this is the way it should be. It's purely exploration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And isn't it interesting that two mental health therapists and a fitness coach are talking about spirituality?
Right.
I mean, why? Oh, are we doing that?
I think it's obvious.
Do you?
Yes, because spirituality is part of your emotional, mental, and physical health. And you need to have a healthy spiritual being, belonging, understanding. Not that you don't, you know, you may not know all the answers yet, but that you're healthily exploring that in order to fulfill the mind, body, and the spirit. Those three things that we're making up, that we often joke that Melissa's the mind, I'm the body, and Deborah's the spirit. We're right here. But it's true. I think you need all three to have a healthy existence on this planet. Mm-hmm. So I think it's obvious why we're talking about that. And I also think not only are we nervous to approach it because of where we are in location in the United States, but also our circle of friends. Mm-hmm. So the three of us have a large circle. And for our area, we have a large circle of unconventional thinkers and people who practice different sorts of spirituality or not spirituality. But we also have, by location, family and friends that are extremely religious and do take this approach still that religion equals Christianity.
Yeah.
And so we respect that, but we know, we feel like there's more out there to be explored and discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And particularly, I think another goal in us doing this is to figure out how to have good conversation and good communication, even when there is not perfect agreement across the board. That it's okay for somebody that has a really traditional view of God to talk to somebody that doesn't or has a much more alternative view of what that is. And still not just be nice to each other, I kind of want to take it a step beyond that and say actually have productive spiritual connection with each other and not be afraid to connect with each other spiritually, because I think for most of us, our best spiritual experiences happen in community. It happens when we're sharing it with each other. And I think it's really, really healing for a lot of us to be able to do that with people that are different, that is not just the version that we're used to. Because what that creates is this sense of we're not that different. We're all on the same path and figuring it out together. Kind of like a really good therapy group does.
Oh, yeah.
That universality. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's another thing that we kind of want to achieve with this. So with that said, one of the things that we're going to do that we're really excited about is do a lot of interviews. Mm-hmm. We did that in the last series with Movement, and that was so much fun and offered so much more than the three of us could do by ourselves. So with the interviews, our hope is to present a really wide spectrum of many different kinds of spirituality. We're going to go all the way from very traditional pastor in a traditional church setting all the way to a Reiki practitioner, hopefully, and a few things in between. And so we really want to present kind of the whole gamut and understand different people's perspectives and takes and actual practical experience. Like, what does this feel like in a day-to-day situation? Because I think that that helps people put it into practice themselves.
Mm-hmm. And I do think we're at a time and place politically, nationally, internationally, where these things need to be discussed. We need to come to the table and we need to have a better understanding of our neighbors and our community and those around us. And I think that we also can see that by the rise of meditation apps and the spirituality and meditation section growing in bookstores and available online, that the time is ripe to explore different forms of spirituality.
Mm-hmm. It is. And I will say, too, that even though I come from an escapee point of view, as I know you do, Melissa, I feel a great deal of affection for the friends of mine and the family of mine and the people I don't even know who are in tradition, in those spaces that I used to occupy. So I think it is time to come to the table and talk about this honestly and not try to hide from each other, because maybe there's nothing to hide from.
Well, and I think that one of the things that I had to get a hold of in the process of leaving where I originated from is this idea that I don't pose a threat to them because I decided that I didn't want to stay, and they don't pose a threat to me because they decided to stay.
Ooh.
That we don't become enemies, we don't become adversaries in any way just because we are no longer part of that same thing. It's kind of like if you start to share an umbrella with somebody and you kind of have this weird kinship just because you're under the same umbrella, and leaving is, well, I'm going to go to this other umbrella, but I'm not your enemy just because I switched, right? I don't have to become an adversary. It doesn't mean that I am condemning you in any way because I decided that I couldn't stay.
Right.
And there's a lot of times that I think a lot of us that end up leaving almost wish that we could have, that have a feeling of grief about leaving because there was so much good that came out of it. I don't know, Deborah, if you ever feel that way, almost missing it even though you don't want to go back.
Well, here's the weird thing. I don't miss that original Church of Christ group at all, and I never have missed it. I've heard my friends who are escapees of that same tradition, some of whom we may interview, I've heard them say, yeah, I miss this or that. I miss the hymns. I miss, you know, the feeling of belonging. I miss the closeness. I miss the community. I never felt that. I think because I went and made myself new versions of all of that. And my community became psychology, became, you know, feminist psychologists. It became all these other things. And, of course, the music. You know how I feel about music and I'm kind of a snob about that. And so I didn't really, really, really honestly miss that music. But here's the funny thing. And so later on, as an adult, having been out of church for 15 years, I made a trip to Europe with my little boy and rediscovered, like, my Anglican roots. And it was so wonderful because there was the music. And I love that. I thought, I have gone to heaven. This is the most amazing thing. Came back and found the Episcopal Church. And love, love, love what happens there. And I've been sort of away from it for the last year or so. And I kind of miss that. I don't miss the original stuff. But I do miss the good parts of the new stuff that I found. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sitting here listening to you both, it strikes me that I mentioned that I'm the outsider because I'm the one that didn't have the religious upbringing. And I find now listening to you that that's a term that I feel when I'm outside of my group of friends and people in this area bring up religion and they assume that you think like they do. Especially clients. And I don't say anything. I just let it go rather than causing conflict or starting a conversation that maybe we're not prepared to start. But it strikes me that a lot of people assume that you're just like them, that you must think like just like them. You live in this area. You look like them. Why wouldn't you go to church every Sunday and think and believe like they do?
Right.
And I'm not an escapee at the same time. So there's nothing for me to miss. And I had someone one time who is an escapee ask me, well, don't you wish that you could just not question and go ahead and believe? Because she and I both question maybe what's on the other side. And I really don't. I'm really comfortable not knowing, exploring, But I think that a lot of people are scared to not have an answer.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for those people, when they say, you know, good Christian guy, you know.
Yeah, that really bothers me. Because I'm a good person. I may not be a Christian. My husband, who's an escapee, he's a good person. Uh-huh. You know, I think there's probably some good Buddhists and good Absolutely. Muslims and good shamans and good, what else?
Good Hindus.
Good Hindus and good so atheists and good agnostics
goddess
and
people.
Good pagans. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking before, the other thing that bothers me,
I'm sitting here laughing because we had to like say, there's good people there too, guys. Like that actually deserved a minute of our time to declare we think there's good people there too. Oh gosh, we got problems.
Yeah. What were we saying? <don't
know>. It's funny. I've noticed myself sort of lapsing into the fog a moment ago, and I realized this subject is so big and so relevant that that may happen. Like, you might ask me a question and I might say, wait, what? Like,
I think this is an area where, like, we don't have fully defined thoughts yet.
Yeah.
Which I'm not used to. I don't think you're used to mm-hmm. that either. Mm-hmm. And also, I will say, because we're all in helping professions, this is one of those topics that we're actually not allowed to talk about.
I know.
That's very true.
And so to me, it feels kind of like a struggle. Like, ooh, what am I allowed to say here? How far can I go with it? Because this is one area that has required a lot of editing, so much editing. And so
and a theology degree. If you don't have a theology degree, right? can you even?
And self-containment.
Yep. Yeah. To hold your stuff really, really tight. Even while hearing other people's struggles, you can't have a reciprocal conversation. So a lot of these things that we're talking about are things that maybe we've never said out loud.
Exactly.
I agree.
We've never explored this out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm hoping that's really liberating for the listeners.
Yeah.
And maybe they're thinking or wanting to say the same things. Right. Or, oh my goodness, there's other people out there that are struggling.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's so important because, you know, I grew up having to be silent. In the Church of Christ, women are silent until spoken to or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to learn in silence. You're not allowed to raise your hand and ask a question. And I discovered that, really, you can't learn until you talk. Mm-hmm. So I just say stuff out loud and hear myself say it and get your reaction before I know what I know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is that a thing? Is that real?
I think so.
I definitely think so. And that's an interesting point because, you know, I grew up, the parents had two daughters and pushed us to ask questions and speak your mind and you can do anything. Coming from a mom who is not allowed in the Catholic Church to explore when she was young, not allowed to talk until she was spoken to, had to cover her head when she went into the church as a woman, had to wear sleeves in the church as a woman. And then I didn't have very many other experiences outside of Catholic Church or maybe Presbyterian or Episcopal, as you mentioned, Deborah. And then I come to, which is really odd that I wouldn't have gone to evangelical or big church growing up in Tulsa, Oklahoma, because Oral Roberts was right there. And it was kind of this other world, this campus that we kind of, you know, laughed at a little bit. Those big praying hands. And you go on TV and try to sell, you know, if you don't call up right now, God's going to call me home and give me money. And it was just this thing that was like, what is almost like a show. It was a show, which didn't happen in any church that we'd been into in the Catholic Church. And then I come to, you know, Springfield, Missouri, and one of my friends took me to my first, Baptist church. And here I was, not knowing what to expect. It was a big church, and there was a band.
Wait, how old were you?
I was 19.
19 when you went to your
first Baptist church, like big Baptist church. Big, with the screens.
This is amazing.
And the band. I'm like, what's going on? Like, where's the little lady with the organ and the guy with the robes? And why isn't everyone being quiet? And why are they standing up? And why are they waving their hands? Like, this is not anything I've ever experienced.
Something else.
Right. And, you know, I'm going off to college and I'm going to hear me roar. I can do anything I want. And the pastor actually said, he in his sermon, he was leading off that he had sons growing up, and his sons were hungry, and they ate everything that he put on their plate. Just like religion, they absorbed it all. And now he had granddaughters, and his granddaughters were picky, and his granddaughters had to be fed and encouraged to take the food. Yes, just like religion, and that the husbands and the men of this congregation were the ones that got their families up and brought them into the church and were the leaders in the household of God and Christ. And I'm sorry, I'm saying this. I wanted to throw up. I wanted to get up and scream and yell. I did leave, Deborah. I got up and I left. I thought, how many fathers woke their kids up, got them dressed, and cooked breakfast and encouraged them all to go to church? How many of them? I wondered how many mothers were sitting there with on their hands.
Yes.
And were the ones that were driving. Mm-hmm.
Developing their ulcers, developing their breast cancers.
Driving their families to church and sitting there wanting to say something.
Oh. And not saying something.
And I never went back, yes, because that was my first experience at age 19.
I can't blame you after a first experience like that. I do not remember my first experience at church because I'm pretty sure it was within weeks of being born. So.
I'm sure it was. As was mine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being shown off.
Yes.
Yeah. In a pretty white dress.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I think that I'm sitting here thinking how much religion ends up getting tied in with fear and manipulation. And a lot of people, when they encounter religious things, that's what they feel. They feel like they're trying to be scared. They're trying to be manipulated into doing something. And I'm just thinking through all of the times where it was just bullying what was happening in church. It was just people bullying other people to try to get them to feel a certain way, respond a certain way, give a certain way. And then we wonder why there is so much guilt associated with it, when the main tactics of a lot of religion is fear, manipulation, bullying. And so we get sick.
So here's the thing. I'm revisiting my comment earlier, thinking about what I might miss. And and I do want to say that there are things to be missed about tradition and the beauty that you find in some traditions. I think the beauty is worth missing. But I started noticing, and this is maybe why I haven't been to church in a while, I started noticing that the Christian paradigm that I was raised in, and even the one I wasn't raised in, even the more open one, wasn't big enough anymore for me personally. And I think it's big enough still for many, many, many good people. But for me personally, I was needing a bigger basket. And I think the bigger basket might be, for me, an answer to what you just said, like making people sick. And
Oh, I could see people missing a sense of community and a sense of family, belonging and family, and a group that you could come to each week and have quiet time and meditate, and you all have the same purpose. I can see that for people. Yeah. But I also see, as an outsider, what Melissa was talking about. And I see almost all of my close friends today, and even my spouse, who are escapees because they had such a thumb on them, that are recovering from trauma. They couldn't be themselves. They couldn't listen to the music they wanted to listen to. They were emotionally, mentally, sometimes even physically abused, put down, told they couldn't do things, weren't allowed to do things. Sadly, as I've gotten older and closer to this group of friends, it's come out how many of them were victims of sexual predators that were hiding amongst the church. Right. Or I see friends that haven't come out about their sexuality because that's not accepted by the church. And that really saddens me. And that's why I think I've always remained an outsider and not wanted to go into this circle.
So you've had to find your spirituality in other ways besides those traditional channels.
Yes.
How do you think you've done that, or what comes to mind there?
I think when I was younger, I just didn't really care. It wasn't important to me. At one point, I may have been even a non-believer completely. But the older I get, I see that we can't explain everything with science. Science doesn't even have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things happen that are just quite unexplainable. And I think I've even mentioned before my experience around age of 30 at a Indian Sundance mm-hmm. ceremony. Yeah. And I couldn't explain that. There's nothing that was going to explain that, scientifically based. But where I find peace, where I can meditate, where I can go to, I think what people find from going to church is when I'm running outside in the woods, when I'm taking a hike, when I'm out in nature,
yeah.
or when I'm making art.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
When I'm making with something,
uh-huh.
when I'm creating,
yeah,
that's when I think, you know, spirituality kind of channels mm-hmm. through mm-hmm. you.
Channeling, yeah, you're channeling a source of something mm-hmm. larger.
So I think this is a good time for us to talk about what we picture in our heads, the image you mentioned,
right.
Melissa.
This is one of my favorite questions to ask people about spiritual things. And this is a spot where we're going to actually ask you guys to participate a little bit. Mm. So we're going to ask a couple of questions, and you are absolutely welcome and encouraged to go to our Facebook page and post your answers, because I'm really, really interested because you get so many very interesting answers to this question. So here's a big one. When you think of God, what do you visualize in your head? What is the actual mental picture that you use to represent God?
So do we get to answer this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
oh,
what you do.
Can I go first?
Have an answer?
Yes,
mm-hmm.
I have an answer. So when we're talking about God, like the word G-O-D in religion, I picture this cartoon-looking character of a guy with like blonde, big, whitey, flowy hair and blue eyes and like these robes, like in clouds,
like?
With wings. Like, it's very cartoony,
yeah.
right? Not real to me.
Okay.
But when I picture spirituality, I think of like in this darkness, there's this little balls of glowing light, some color that are just spinning, spinning, spinning. And it's just beauty. It's just gorgeous beauty, energy,
that.
Particles that just
that.
Are full of
like
light.
Like Pocahontas. So okay, so remember in Pocahontas when they're singing the song Colors of the Wind?
And I never
like,
saw the
little,
movie.
Oh,
okay,
well,
now I have to check this
you
out.
Need to watch
okay,
it that's what
Disney needs
about.
To watch Pocahontas.
Yes. So there's like these swirling little, you know, balls of light and color in the wind. Anyway, you're talking about Pocahontas.
Okay,
you just don't know it.
All right, I'm gonna look up Pocahontas. All right, okay, now you guys go.
Okay, so I have two answers to this question, because growing up, I have a really funny answer to this. I always picture God as a businessman with a briefcase.
I did not expect you to say that.
I know. And I really can't explain why, other than I think that God was our boss, because we were employed by God. Right? And so a lot of my mental interactions with who God was has to do with he's our boss. Like, he's my parents' boss, and you know, I'm an MK, which means I'm working too. And so he's my boss,
wow.
and he gets us paid because he tells money to people to give us money and all that. So I think that the internal representation was a businessman.
God is an employer.
God is an employer.
This brings up so much in my head that we could talk about. I'm thinking.
So if anybody out there is an MK or a PK, you're going to resonate with this, because God has been your employer before. And you
I think
know
you should probably
I mean
define
this.
MK and PK for okay, some
so
of our listeners.
Okay, so missionary kid and pastor kid.
Mm.
And I will say, if you are a missionary kid and a pastor kid, most of us end up struggling at some point with our internalization of who God is. And I think this is part of why, is because God is not actually an employer. We are not actually employees, but that is how we end up relating to him. And so our internalization, our introject of who God is, ends up being the businessman in the briefcase, which is really unhelpful when you are no longer employed by God and now you're trying to figure out how to do spirituality and an actual relationship with God.
Yeah.
Outside of that, it gets really complicated. So that is no longer my internal representation of who God is. At this point, it vacillates between two things. The first one is I have an internal representation of who Jesus is, which is a Jewish guy in jeans.
with rope sandals?
No,
like,
no,
in dreadlocks?
No rope sandals. So, I'll actually tell you, like, What always pops in my head is a scene of sitting on a dock by a lake. And I think this happened when I read the book The Shack. Like, somehow one of these images, like, really got in there somehow. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sitting on a dock, and he's always to my left for some reason, and we're just talking. And so it's this very, like, mellow interaction. But that's my internalization of him. And then when I think of God, I don't actually think of a being anymore. Mm-hmm. The one that I am currently using and find the most helpful is the feeling of gravity. Whatever it is that holds the world together, the pull that makes life alive, the pressure from outside and the pull from inside that keeps our world as it is.
Oh, Melissa, that is beautiful.
That is what I imagine right now. And then on the opposite end of that, it's like a flip book of creation. So, Shauna, like you were talking about nature and things like that. So, trees, plants, animals, people, my baby's face, my friends' faces, all of the things that are a part of creation, I find God and the divine in all of those little things. And so that's actually what I see. When I think of who God is, wow, it's the gigantic element of it, and it's the microscopic element of it. It's both. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is kind of shaping the way I'm understanding how to do spirituality quite a bit, and that is big time a change from where I came from. Because originally it would have been God with a briefcase,
yeah,
or some version of like Santa Claus God,
yeah,
you know, the
yeah,
long flowing white beard. Yeah. I think that was in there as well.
Uh-huh.
So that's, yeah, my two answers.
I probably had the Santa Claus God at one point. And I think that our view of God is deeply, deeply shaped by our attachment histories. So I'll say that I have had a missing, like a blank, you know, the sort of image online when somebody's avatar should be there and it's not, and you just see a blank. Mm-hmm. That has been
a blank. Yeah.
But it's morphed into different things too. At one point, I think I began really feeling like music is it. You have to go through the music to find God. So God was like a picture of Ludwig von Beethoven. Uh-huh. So that was a stage. And now, this is kind of strange, but I see a cartoon. I see sunshine in a cartoon, and it has like a little telephone cord. It's curly, like a pig's tail. And that little tether comes down, 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 and attaches to me. So me tethered to the sunshine above is kind of what I see now.
Mm-hmm. I find that we got 35 minutes into this before the word divine came up.
Divine?
Divine. Yeah. What a great word.
I really like that word. I think that word has actually kind of helped me. One of the things I've been thinking about is that question of what have I been missing? And I remember using this phrase when I was trying to explain to somebody why I've let go of so much that I've let go of and why I haven't let go of it completely. It's this feeling of the guy that you never got over.
Hmm.
And I could never get over Jesus. Never could.
What do you mean?
It's like all of the religious stuff, I could just slough that off. Like, come on, that this cannot be real. This is not. Even a lot of things that are, you know, stated black or white in the Bible. Like, I can figure out how to explain that to myself, let it go, etc. Could never, ever get over the idea that Jesus has to be exactly who he said he was. Mm. Still can't let that go.
Really?
There's something about who he is, who that person is and was, that I can't, it won't change. It's like so rock solid in me that it doesn't matter what else changes around it. That is just set. It's just set.
I feel that way about Beethoven. And I'm so serious about that. I can't get over Beethoven.
Yeah. There's some, and I think that in spirituality, this kind of explains why we wrestle with it so much. If it was easy to explain away, if it was easy to just write it off, I think a lot more of us would, because frankly, it would be very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really, really convenient if we could just let go of it and not be worried about it anymore. And yet, we wrestle with it and torture ourselves over it and do really painful things like try new churches all the time, even though that's excruciating, right? Like, it's a miserable activity to keep trying new places, and yet we do. And I think part of that is guilt. Part of that is fear of hell, because a lot of us still have that. But then there's this other part of, I just can't get over something that I experienced, right? So maybe it was a spiritual experience we had. Maybe it was going through something really difficult, and the thing that got us through was our belief. It was our faith. And so how can I let go of that thing that carried me through something so hard? Yeah. And for me, I can't. I just can't. And so whatever else gets added, there's a few things that will never leave. And those are like the anchors that kind of let me do more exploration. I can be much steadier in the exploring because I've got that one anchor.
Right. Like sense? I was saying before about I need to be a little more steady before I go explore Reiki with you. I'm not quite anchored enough to do that.
I remember, you know, like Deborah said, I've been exploring a lot of alternative things. And I think that it is because of that anchor that it lets me do that without fear. I'm not afraid of getting lost in it because I know there's a couple of things that will never change. And when we feel really anchored in that way, I think it actually does open us up more without fear. We don't have to be afraid of the exploring.
So Melissa, you had a second question for our listeners to answer and post on our Facebook page.
Yeah, so here's one that we're going to be asking everybody that we interview. We're asking it of ourselves, and we want you guys to participate as well, is why do you think that spiritual things are so important to us? And we've kind of talked about that a little bit, just our perspectives on why this is so important. But we want you guys to kind of weigh in that as well. Like, why is it so important to you? Or maybe there's, for some of you, where it's not, where you really have let it go and feel comfortable with that. We want to talk about that as well. But that's a question we're going to ask all of our guests and let them kind of weigh in on, why do humans have this draw to spiritual things? We just never get very far away from it. We always come back to it. So do you guys want to add anything as far as your own answers to that?
I think it's about the question, who am I? And I think it's back to that C.S. Lewis idea we were talking about earlier, that we all deeply want to go home. Our deepest urge is always to go home. And that home has something to do with the question of who am I? Where have I been?
Where do I come from?
Where do I come from? I think that's what all of us want to answer. Where do I come from?
Yeah.
And I think there's also, again, going back to that balance of mind, body, spirit. Those three things balance each other out. You know, we have three curves in our spine that balance us out from gravity. In our cervical spine, thoracic spine, lumbar spine. You know, we talk about trilogy, and that's like our personal trilogies, our mind, our body, and our spirit. And even if we may not, some of us consciously think about practicing spirituality. I don't consciously, you know, I don't go to church. I don't necessarily pray, but I make art. I run in the woods. I talk to myself. I love people. I want to help people. I think it's there maybe sometimes even though we don't know we're practicing it.
I would agree with that. In fact, when you said earlier that we have our mind, we have our body, we have our spirit, we have to attend to all those things, a little question popped up in my mind. What if all of that is spirit? What if my body is spirit? What if my mind is spirit? What if everything about me is spirit? And it's all contained in that. And what if that makes it so compelling that I can't see my three spine curves without, you know, without thinking.
Well, and think about all the different ways we use the word spirit. She's got a great spirit. No, oh, her spirit's just exuding from her. The spirits. The spirit. I'm making a drinking signal inside my hand.
Spirits,
yeah. That's really true. I think one of the reasons, at least for us, the three of us, why this topic probably feels so important is that healing is inherently spiritual. That you always encounter somebody's spirituality when you're working with healing. And I don't think it really matters what kind of healing it is. You know, even when you're talking to medical doctors, some of the biggest barriers that you run into for people is the spiritual aspect of them, is the emotional, their thought life, those things that get in the way of really being able to overcome the physical obstacles. And we've talked about when spirituality is not going well, when there's something disrupting us spiritually, what that does to our body. So it's always connected. So as healers or as someone seeking healing, I don't think we can get away from it. I think it is the same work. I think healing is spirituality, and spirituality is healing. It has to go both ways.
Good points.
So we invite you guys to participate and kind of share those two questions. Number one, what do you visualize when you think of God? And we have paved the way for it to be as bizarre as it needs to be and as honest as it needs to be about what you actually see when you think of that. And so please post that to Facebook. And then that other question of why do you think spiritual things are so important to us? And for you personally, why is it so important or not so important to you? And so we're super looking forward to several interviews coming up with people that are going to shed more light on this and share from their personal experience. And that's all for today.
That's a lot.
I know.
I know. We could either sit here and talk for 5 more hours.
Right. Or we could go ahead and be done for today and promise that we will be back.
Yes. We will be back.
We will. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we will see you next time and on Facebook.
Thank you so much for listening to Reconceive. Don't forget to add this podcast to your RSS feed or iTunes so that you don't miss an episode. Follow us at Reconceive Podcast on Facebook or Instagram, and find us on our website at beyondstudio417.com/reconceive. And if anything you've heard today has made you wonder if it's time to reach out for help, please don't ignore that. Message us for assistance in finding a qualified therapist in your area. We would enjoy helping you in that way. From all of us here at Reconceive, see you next time.